sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear. Done, man, attack. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk where I walk. Watch out. We run New York. Policeman come. We bust him out the park. I know this for a fact. You don't like how I act. You claim I'm selling crack. Well, you be doing that. I'd rather say see ya, cause I would never be ya. Be a officer, you wicked overseer. You hot shot, you wanna get pops and be a savior. First show a little respect, change your behavior. Change your attitude, change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen land. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you wanna follow me. Your laws are minimal, cause you won't even think about looking at the real criminal. This has got to cease, cause we be getting hyped to the sound of the police.
Welcome back. You're listening to No One Is Illegal Radio, part of CKUT's Open Conspiracy for Social Change on Off the Hour. We're at 90.3 FM in Montreal and at www.ckut.ca on the web. This past December 1st marked the one-year anniversary of the death of Mohamed Anis Binnis, with vigils organized at the site of his killing at the corner of Côte des Neiges and Kent. Mohamed Anis Binnis, 25 years old, left a neighborhood mosque just minutes from his home after early morning prayers on December 1st, 2005. He was shot by Montreal police who were assisting Sûreté du Québec investigators carrying out a search warrant in a fraud case nearby, totally unrelated to Binnis. Still, inexplicably, Binnis is alleged to have tried to stab a cop and was shot twice and killed. Binnis' family is adamant that the allegations against Mohamed are completely out of character. In the words of one sister, the idea of Mohamed Anis walking around with a kitchen knife as he left the mosque on the morning of December 1st, there's no way we're going to swallow a story like that. We do better to believe in Santa Claus. In January, a month after the shooting death of Mohamed Anis, there were thousands of mainly Moroccan and Arab protesters who demonstrated to demand justice and answers. But now, more than a year after the killing, the death of Mohamed Anis Binnis remains shrouded in mystery. The police and outside prosecutors have provided no written report to corroborate any of the claims that the police have made. The special prosecutor has absolved the police of any responsibility for the killing, saying they acted in self-defense. There's still no independent proof that the police version of the event is true. Even video footage from a nearby building has not been handed over and might have been destroyed. The circumstances surrounding the killing of Mohamed Anis Binnis has been buried and the family treated with arrogance and disrespect. The mystery and secrecy surrounding this case reinforces the belief by many in the Montreal community that Mohamed Anis Binnis was killed by police in a case of racial profiling. Without any evidence provided to the family, we can only speculate that the police and the prosecutors are covering up the killing of a young Muslim man outside of a mosque in Montreal by racist and trigger-happy Montreal cops in circumstances that, if revealed, would make Montreal explode in outrage and anger. Jaggy of the No One's Illegal Montreal Collective interviewed Mohamed Anis Binnis' twin sister, Khadija Binnis, after the December 1st, 2005 vigils to remember her brother's death. That was actually the December 1st, 2006 vigils to remember the brother's death. With eloquence and much emotion, she goes into detail about the case and makes a plea for community support to bring justice in the case.
I'm speaking with Khadija Binnis. Khadija is a resident of Montreal. She is an interior design student. She's also the twin sister of Mohamed Anis Binnis, who was killed more than 1 year ago at the corner of Côte des Neiges and Kent in very mysterious and still unexplained circumstances. Khadija, welcome to No One Is Legal Radio.
Thank you very much, Shaggy.
Khadija, December 1st was the anniversary of the killing of your brother. And I know it's always difficult to talk about a killing of a close person, your twin brother. Could you just tell us how you feel more than a year ago? What stands out for you as you reflect on the fact that your brother is no longer with us and the circumstances in which he was killed?
Well, thank you very much for the first of all. As you know, it's very difficult to lose someone you love. someone from your family, just a friend, and to lose a twin brother, it's very, very difficult. It still is today. I mean, it's hard to talk about it. It's very difficult. And especially the way it was done. I mean, we all have to go one day, but just the way it was done, it's we don't expect that in the country that we live in Canada. And the fact that we still haven't had any closure, we have the feeling that, you know, we're being lied to and something is hidden from us. And the fact that it's not clear, it's very hard to get closure.
Khadija, for most Montrealers, obviously, we know very little about your brother except that he was killed last year in a police killing. So could you tell us more about your brother? Who was he? What were his interests? Tell us a little bit more about his personality and who he was.
He was a very polite person. I mean, anyone that knew him would tell you that while talking, he would always have a smile in his face, and he was a smiley talker, if I can say that. He was a very generous person also of his time, of his things. He's my twin brother, and I mean, brothers and sisters, you know, like, we would get to fight, and he was always the one, you know, the more mature, if I can say, not fighting, just letting the dust go down and then come back and talk about things. He was also a shy person, but very positive things to say about him. When he was a kid, he was playing like a normal life. He was doing, he was in a team of hockey. He was in the cadets, the Marine cadets of Canada. Just, you know, a regular teenager. And at school, he was very, very, very intelligent. Very good grades, like chemistry, mathematics. He was very intelligent, very autodidact. Very self-taught. He would go and get information, and very intelligent.
Khadija, could you speak a bit about what you think about the circumstances of your brother's killing? From what we know, sometime in the early morning of December 1st, 2005, your brother left a prayer space in Côte de Neige, not very far from where he lived. Mm-hmm. And sometime after he left that space, he was killed. And we are led to believe by the police that your brother stabbed another policeman, and that's why he was shot and killed. How do you react to that that recounting of events? What's your response to what the police are saying about the circumstances of your brother's death?
I mean, a reaction, the way they're describing it, is it's not something that I know of my brother. He was, as I said before, a very calm person, not somebody that would just go off in a nutshell. And the fact that he's coming out from a prayer place and how he was spiritually, it's not something that makes sense to me. It doesn't make sense, and especially just giving us a version like that and not backing it up by material, it makes me feel like, no, they're lying. There's something wrong with the version that we're being told. And there wasn't only one version. There was like so many versions at the beginning, trying to hide so many things, and so all this hiding and secrecy, it just makes us feel very uncomfortable and makes us even more put in our position that this is not true what they're saying. And also, I mean, the place that where it happened, there's a bell building and there's video camera two video cameras there. And where it happened, it's really in the where the camera can take the shot. And they're not showing us this information. They're saying that, oh, it's inexploitable. What does it mean, inexploitable? I mean, is it inexploitable for you or for us? What does that mean? And also, I mean, I have a letter here that our lawyer, Pierre Saquette, sent to Dr. Jean Brochu, coroner en chef adjoint. It was sent on December 22nd to tell him to issue an ordonnance to ask Bell Canada to preserve the original, because those videos, at one point, they get destroyed or erased. And not even, that wasn't done. I mean, why? Why don't, like, if you're claiming that everything is transparent and everything is done the way it's supposed to be, and police are saying, you know, we want to help and we want to do the right thing, so then why, when we ask you something that is very legitimate, and especially we don't know what happened between 6:30, that's when the imam of the mosque saw my brother for the last time, and then he was killed at around 7:20 a.m. So, I mean, it takes 3 minutes for him to get home. What happened? Why 50 minutes? And just a simple procedure to block so that tape is preserved for proof, it wasn't done. So, I mean, I understand, like, everybody has goodwill and everything, but it's very confusing, very confusing. It's hard to trust that... willingly the system will give us truth.
Is it confirmed that the video evidence was destroyed? Is that confirmed information?
To us, yes. Because when we spoke to the technician of Bell, they told us, well, it's going to be destroyed very soon, and the ordinance was not issued by the coroner en chef adjoint.
Khadija, this case has attracted a lot of tension back in Morocco. Obviously, your family is of Moroccan origin, mm-hmm. and your father still lives there. In one of the articles in a Moroccan journal called Le Reporter, mm-hmm. The following was said: the idea of Mohamed Anis walking around with a kitchen knife as he left a mosque on the morning of December 1st, there's no way we're going to swallow a story like that. We'd be better to believe in Santa Claus. I'm just wondering what you think about that sentiment that was expressed in that news story.
Well, basically that, you know, everybody knows that Santa Claus doesn't exist, but we still... there still is an event every year. I have nothing against that. I'm just saying that to compare that, it's like telling the kid, Santa Claus exists, and we well know that he doesn't exist. And, I mean, it's just a parable or an analogy, if you will, to say that unless you give us proof, unless you give us all the information, we're not going to believe just what you throw at us. And, I mean, even when my father met with the coroner, he wasn't even provided a copy of the report. It was just read to him. I mean, what is this? It's just very confusing, very frustrating.
Khadija, the collective opposed to police brutality has denounced the killing of your brother as a murder, mm-hmm. and they refer to it as a case of racial profiling. I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Would you describe this as a murder, and do you see this as an example of racial profiling?
I mean, there was loss of life in the hands of the system. I mean, the entity that has to protect the citizens. I understand that we live in a society that is very paranoid about what's going on in the world and since 9/11 and so on. But I mean, it's a loss of life. I feel we're losing our humanity. It's somebody that died, and today we hear this in the news: 50 people died. It's like normal, and it's just very shocking, very shocking. And to say it's a murder, I mean, there's a lot of words to describe what happened to my brother. The fact is that he's dead today, and that there was an injustice, and we're looking for justice, and we want information. It's very hard not to have any information, or just have little information that makes you feel like we're being insulted, like our intelligence is being insulted by reading us the reports. I mean, what is this?
And do you think the appearance of your brother and the fact that he was of Arab origin, and that he was bearded, and that he was wearing a traditional gown, prayer gown, that might lead you to believe that this was an instance of racial profiling?
I mean, it's not something that we could put aside. My brother had a full beard. He was wearing a turban. Muslim clothing. I'm not in the police head to tell you this is exactly what happened, but it may lead to think that, and it's not something we can just put aside. He looks like a Muslim, and a lot of black people were killed because they were black. I mean, I don't know.
After the London bombings in March of 2004, there was a lot of fear and paranoia, and there was a Brazilian man who was shot and killed on the London subway.
Absolutely.
And originally they thought that he was he might have been Arab, and that he was acting suspiciously, and originally the police were saying that he ran away and that he had a big backpack on him. And in the end, it all turns out to be false. He was walking onto the metro normally. He didn't run away, and it was a cover-up. And if it wasn't for the fact that he was Brazilian and had the entire Brazilian government behind him, maybe none of this would have gotten out. So I'm just wondering if you're familiar with that case.
I heard about it, exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, when you hear about that case, how you relate it to your brother's case. Do you see similarities potentially? And do you see this as part of a pattern? I know this is somebody who's personal to you. He's your own brother. So it's hard to generalize. But do you see those broader similarities?
I mean, yes. The way that he was talked, they were talking about him in the media the first day, saying that he was mentally ill, and just throwing ideas like that without just taking whatever information was given to the media and just throwing that into the mainstream and just say, oh, you know, another one, good thing we got rid of him. I mean, it's just dehumanizing. It's just putting the other in general as being evil, and as being, it's okay, it's people that could be expendable, is that the word? So, yeah, I mean, if the relation between the two cases, very hard to. It's a very big thing. I mean, we're all human. We should be able to get along. This is ridiculous.
Khadija, about a week ago, there was a vigil held at the location where your brother was killed, and I had an opportunity to speak with you. at that point. That's where we first met. And you you mentioned that the demonstration that happened back in January, a little less than a month after the killing, January of 2006, that drew out, I think, several thousand people, who knows how many exactly, but at least 2,000 to 3,000 or 4,000.
Yeah.
There's different accounts. But that you mentioned that that was the largest community mobilization against the police killing in over 20 years. Could you speak about that mobilization and why you thought it was important? And do you think that's needed more in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, that is true democracy. That is the truest show of democracy, is to go in the street and demonstrate peacefully and in an organized way and pass the message that we wanted to pass. And it's very important, unless it's done very regularly, and to really make people pay attention. And I mean, there was people just walking down the street, and when they heard what it was about, they just jump in and walk with us. And I mean, from all walks of life, from all religions, from all, you know. And it's just you have that feeling that, you know, the cause is for men with big M, and to be able to live in not in a police state or not in a big brother state, but in a true democracy that respects everybody, that you know. And the demonstrations, or to go on a walk, or it's very important, and it also makes people realize that by joining forces and by talking to each other, they can find solutions, and they can you know, have a bigger weight than just one person screaming out of her lungs. And also to make the communities are mostly, they're not talking to each other a lot. So with that demonstration, you saw everybody coming together and everybody wanting to help, and it's very good.
Khadija, as far as I understand, your family has seen absolutely no written reports or nothing in writing that explains the circumstances of your brother's death. Is that true?
That's true. Nothing in writing.
And if I understand, the only sort of response that you've gotten is very recent, which is when the prosecutor who was heading up the investigation into the death of your brother met with your father. Is that right?
Yep.
And could you just explain, describe for us how that meeting went? And do you feel that is adequate to deal with your family's and the community's questions in this matter?
Absolutely not. I mean, I was not there, but my father, he was there with his with our lawyer, and they had to write down like the points that they found, they felt were important, and it's just insulting our intelligence once again. Just you know, that's all we're giving you, and you better just take what we're giving you, and that's it. And we feel very frustrated because it's a whole system that you're going against, and the people that are willing to help, they're not in the positions that can, you know what I mean? I mean, it's very hard. And for us to be, you know, just given very little information, it doesn't help us give right to my brother, to what happened to him, and to find the truth, what happened that morning between 6:30 a.m. and 7:20 a.m. Doesn't help at all.
Khadija, could you describe some of the inconsistencies and contradictions that you and others who've studied this case closely have discovered in the police accounts of what happened to your brother when he was killed on the morning of December 1st, 2005?
First of all, the time it took for us to get any information, for us, it rings a bell. I mean, it doesn't make us comfortable in trusting the system will give us truth and will give my brother's rights. And when we received the rapport d'investigation du coroner, it was dated of January 2006. And then when we received this information, my father received it in Morocco in September 2006, so like 9 months later. And then when we asked about this information, how come we received it in September, and it's dated in January 2006, well, the only response was, oh, it's an error of typing. And it seems every time we express concern, it's an error of typing or an error of stamping or something like that. And also there's an information here, again, from the rapport d'investigation du coroner. It says that there was une plaie superficielle est située à la main gauche à la base du pouce. So that there's a cicatrice, how do you say? There's a scar on his left hand, and then in the rapport médico-légal, it's in the right hand. So, I mean, there's one report says the left hand, the other report says the right hand, and I mean, okay. And we didn't have any explanation about that, by the way. And also the way, this is like very disturbing, the image, the direction of the bullets, the way, like, where it went in and where it was found in my brother's body. It's very, very, it's going down. I mean, the arrow is pointing down as if he was sitting down when he was hit.
This month's show is produced by Mustafa, Aisha, Jaggi, and Layla, who are members of the No One Is Illegal Collective in Montreal. Thanks again to Trudy Miller, Angel Smith, and Khadija Benes for taking time to speak with us about their struggles for their loved ones. No One Is Illegal sends a message of solidarity and support to the Millers and the Beneses as they continue their courageous battles for justice. We will undoubtedly have more reports on Six Nations and the Mohamed Thomas Benes case, and will continue to mobilize locally against police brutality and for Indigenous sovereignty and self-determination. And now, stay tuned for our friends from Native Solidarity News. Justice for Mohamed Thomas Benes. Free Trevor Miller.